Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Melt Hammer podcast. It's episode 200, Steve. We made it. Come on.
Hooray.
Hooray.
Hooray. Hooray.
I'm not going to do the bad sound effects. That's for another time.
Yeah,
we do have them, though. 200 episodes of this.
Hold on.
Whoa.
There's no better time than it. This is not the good time. This is the best
right,
time.
Fine. Let's do it.
If we're going to do it, I mean, what are you saving it for when the bloody new Avatar album comes out?
No, as much as they would love that. All right, we'll do it then. We'll do it. Steve, we made it to episode 200. Let's go. That sound effect goes for 36 seconds, by the way.
Does it? Wow.
I don't know who needs that.
Long time.
Who needs 36 seconds of cheering on a podcast ever? Who's going to sit and listen to that? It is episode 200. I am Mel from Metal Hammer. Thank you so much for being with us through all 200 of these episodes. And even more so for everyone who was with us for the last time we reached 200 episodes, about 10 years ago now. It's been an amazing journey. We appreciate you being here with us. And I enjoyed, as you probably realise by now, by the man, the myth, the legend, Metal Hammer contributor, Mr. Stephen Hill. How are you, Steve?
All right, thanks very much, the Ed Sheeran to your Bring Me the Horizon this week.
I'll fucking take that, mate. Thank you very much.
I don't know if I would take that, and I suggested it. What a ridiculous thing to say. That was a fun time, though, right?
Yourself up. Yeah, enjoyed it. Like, you know, people were... it was one of those things that provoked extreme opinions on every which way of the aisle, wasn't it? Like, some people were disgusted by it. Some of the people who never probably wanted Bring Me the Horizon to be covered in metal press in the first place were somehow offended that they were now teaming up with a pop artist. I don't get that at all. Some people thought it was the greatest thing that's ever happened. I thought it was cool.
I mean, it was cool. It's no KLF in the Extreme Noise Terror, but it'll do.
It's not. Shout out to the person on the Metal Hammer Instagram that referenced that, by the way. I was like, yes, that person knows.
That was good.
Yeah, but it was good. Little Sims was the best thing of the day, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But you haven't come here to hear us talk about that. You come here to hear us talk about heavy stuff, such as the latest issue of Metal Hammer, which is out right now. Go over to bit.ly/buyhammer. You can pick up our latest issue. It has the one and only Korn on the front cover. We reviewed their ace new album, Requiem, on the podcast last week. It is an absolute banger. And we have a world-exclusive interview with all four current members of Korn, which feels like a bit of a weird thing to say. But we do cover the whole Fieldy thing. We talk about the new album. There's some crazy anecdotes in there as well from all four members that are still currently in the Korn fold. We also have a big celebration of 40 years of Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden. We've got a big thing on the unlikely resurrection of nu metal, talking about the likes of Limp Bizkit, Papa Roach, Mudvayne, Tetrarch, and many more. We've got a big old interview with Jerry Cantrell that Stephen Hill did. We've got Venom Prison. We've got Bloodywood, who we're going to review the debut album of in just a bit. We got a big old Bathory piece as well for the true believers, the true metal fans out there. We got you covered. All of that is in the new issue out right now. If you want a special edition of the new issue, a special bundle edition, no less, you can go and pick up an exclusive variant of our latest issue featuring a different cover, beautiful another cover shot done by the master Travis Shin, and an exclusive screen print, foil effect screen print. It's all lovely and shiny of the Korn Requiem album art. You can go and get that right now from bit.ly/KornBundle. That's bit.ly/KornBundle. All you Korn fans, don't mess around. These bundles always sell out. And I think we only got 200 of those worldwide. So do not mess around if you want to pick up one of those. It's such a crazy time for music at the moment that we are doing two review roundups in a row, which we very, very rarely do here on the podcast. But the big albums just keep on coming. There's so much great music coming out. And I think we're going to start with the new album, the self-titled third album from Manuel Gagno, a.k.a. Zeal and Ardour, one of the most fascinating faces to have appeared on the extreme metal scene in the last few years. It's now been 5 years, if you can believe it, Steve, since that first album, Devil is Fine, came out. So he's not exactly a brand new face on the scene, but still kind of a young artist. We just had him on the cover in January. Were you excited for this record when you knew it was coming?
Oh, always, always excited for anything that happens in the Zeal and Ardour universe. I am a massive fan of this band, an absolutely massive fan. I genuinely adore every single thing that Manuel has put his name to under this project thus far. He's brilliant. I think it's just a brilliant, brilliant thing. And from such flippant small acorns has something so glorious grown.
Mm. Such flippant, slightly racist acorns, if you know the full story of the kind of weird Reddit community that kind of almost goaded Manuel into making this music. And he showed them up a treat, didn't he?
Yeah, he arguably got one of the definitive metal bands of this generation. I think, we'll get into where I think this album will send them and take them and stuff in a little bit, but certainly one of the most interesting bands to come out of the metal scene in a long time. Just basically, like you say, from stupid, flippant, quite risible comments from people online, and he's taken that and he's turned it into a full-blown career that's seen him go and tour with like Rage Against the Machine and get on the front cover of pretty much every big metal press magazine cover you care to mention. So
playing with Meshuggah in not too long as well, that's an all right
that'll do. Yeah, so you know, I think he's done all right.
I think he's done all right. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Steve. I've loved absolutely everything that's come under the Zeal and Ardor banner so far. Devil Is Fine was one of the most unique and exciting things we'd heard in the underground for quite some time. Stranger Fruit, I think, refined what he was doing on Devil Is Fine, that kind of really unique blend of blues, chain gang chants and black metal. He then obviously did the Wake of a Nation EP as well, which was particularly pertinent and quite an emotional release because it came in the middle of the explosion of the Black Lives Matter movement following the death of George Floyd. You know, everything he's done so far has felt big, has felt exciting, and kind of been, you know, it's already feeling like a Zeal and Ardor release is a bit of an event release in the metal scene, which is really great. I mean, we know that unless it's a debut album, releasing a self-titled record is usually seen as something of a statement, right? And I think this is a pretty banner year for Manuel. I mean, he's been on our cover. He's just got a cover for Kerrang. You know, I think this is the album where maybe we see if Zeal and Ardor are destined to be kind of a brilliant but mostly underground oddity, or whether they can be more than that. I mean, what do you think of this record, Steve? Has he produced the goods for you?
Well, I think what we've got here to kind of go, like to sort of tag on to what you're saying, is ultimately you've got something that started out as a bit of a bedroom project joke. It's something
experiment.
Experiment done rather flippantly from a sort of quite a flippant source, which is then changed and adapted a bit. And I really love, like, Devil Is Fine is great, you know, for what it is. It's great. It's really, really unique. There aren't any other records that kind of ever that have sounded like that. Stranger Fruit, I think, congealed those sounds together in a much more cohesive way. But what we have here with this record, I think, is kind of putting that as that whole kind of elevator pitch of like, oh look, it's black metal and it's kind of chain gang music. Oh, don't, what two weird things to put together, aren't they weird? And it's kind of, I think this record puts that to bed. If people thought that Zeal and Ardor was like this one trick pony, I think this record is proof that there is longevity in this project. And this is the, for me, this is like an excellent segue into what I expect to be the second act of Zeal and Ardor's career, if you like, because ultimately there's less extreme metal on this record. You know, there's less metal that is that proper gnarly, nasty underground metal. And for me, it's kind of his Chaos AD.
Okay.
You know,
it's, was not expecting that reference, but that's good.
Well, it's kind of going from, you know, I think the stuff that the last few albums where I'm like, he's really good at doing the soulful, bluesy, there's like Nina Simone-isms. I mean, Stranger Fruit being the name of the last album, obviously, but all of that stuff, I think he's amazing at that.
And I think that was always, sorry to cut you off, but I think that was always the stuff that came across particularly well live as well. And we noticed that right from those earliest gigs when he played like The Underworld and stuff, like those kind of slower, bluesier, stompier moments were really like, they came over amazingly live.
Yeah, and I thought that, you know, the metallic stuff and the really heavy stuff was good, but, you know, I always felt like that was maybe not quite as good as the the more soulful stuff. And I thought it was better, and it kind of, they merged together better on the second record. But now, I mean, there is a lot of, there's, I don't want to make people immediately think like this isn't a heavy album or anything, because it is, but I don't think it's extreme in the same way as like the metal on Devil Is Fine was blast beats and tremolo and black metal and screech. Like there's a lot of Sepultura in this. I think there's a lot of groove metal. There's a lot of alternative metal. There's a lot of rock, you know, there's stuff that is more like rock than metal. I mean, there's a song towards the end called ABV. Is that what it's called? And that to me sounds like, hold on, I've got the thing right in front of me. It's called JMB. JMB. And
fucking mad, that song.
And that is not like, that's got some real heavy vocals on it. But musically, like, it's not a million miles away from Caius or even like Muse or something. Do you know what I mean? It's like a rock band. It's like kind of, it's actually rockier rather than kind of black metal, I think.
It does a lot in not very much, long amount of time, that song. Because there's a moment where, you're right, like, it could be something like from Muse. There's kind of like a floaty, almost proggy instrumental section. But then there's a brief period as well where it goes into like the most savage bit of Lamb of God that you could possibly find. And it's all within, I don't know if that song's even 2 minutes long. It's so quick for what happens in there.
Yeah, it's really quick. And yeah, I just think there's loads of... The thing that was amazing about Zeonardo that I thought was really genuinely amazing, that he nailed from day dot, was all of that kind of... All of the all that stuff. All the, like, you know, the really kind of deep, rich, soulful, jazzy vocal parts that I always thought were brilliant. And it was kind of rhythmically really kind of propulsive, and it had that, you know, like he said of the last album about how it was written with, you know, in mind of you kind of rowing this massive long boat and stuff, and it still moves like that. But I actually think that the metal on this one, this time, you mentioned Lamb of God, Sepultura, I think there are, like, there's so much that I think people who, again, we sort of said it in Venom Prison last week, this has got, and I think even more so for this has got so much that you think you could play this in a rock club. There are songs on this album that you could play in a rock club that would make people, like, it's groovy.
There's songs on this album that I want to, like, blast in the car while, like, driving along, kind of just banging my head, which isn't quite the thing you would normally associate with, especially a lot of that early Zeonardo material.
Yeah. And I think, like, you might not like it if you're a black metal zealot or purist or whatever, but I mean, if you are, you probably don't like Zeonardo anyway. But
yeah,
it's like new metal. Like, this has new metal esque bounce to it. Not in the same way as like the new metal revival bounce.
No, not in your face.
It's not Tetrarch or Cane Hill or whatever, but, and obviously I think they're borrowing from, you know, a different type of new metal. But I think when you look at early parts of System of a Down's career, like, there's some of the riffs on that are fairly similar. There's a little bit of the industrial sort of strain that goes through it that I think's been added and built upon on this record as well. And the result is way more catchy, way more instantaneous, and but at the same time, it still could only be one band.
Yeah.
And again, we said it with Venom Prison before. If you can balance something, make something really new, but still only sound like, this could never be mistaken for anyone else, you know? And that's really hard to pull that trick off, I think.
It is, yeah. It's, I mean, it's so, it's such a key thing. I mean, one of the things I noted when I was listening to it for, I don't know, 6th or 7th time, I guess, today, earlier, but it's hard for bands that have come at least somewhat from the extreme metal scene to retain some of that kind of subversiveness, because subversiveness doesn't have to come from just heaviness or blast beats or screaming about Satan or, you know, whatever. Subversiveness can come from a vibe. It can come from a production and all that kind of stuff. It's why Behemoth have been so successful. But I think that he still retained that kind of eerie otherworldliness of that first record all the way through to this album. I think it really helps. And yeah, I mean, it's got all those really interesting touchstones as well. Like you said, from new metal to groove metal to thrash to everything in between. I thought Immersion was a really interesting song. It's got a kind of bit of a Ghost Bath vibe to it. So he's kind of stretching into slightly different parts of the extreme metal scene as well as kind of coming out of the...
I thought that opened like a modern Bring Me the Horizon song. So, I mean, when you consider that you just compared it to Ghost Bath, I think it opens with like... modern pop. It opens like a modern pop.
It does, yeah, it does. And that's one of the things that I think he's evolved really well, because one of the bits that I always found a little bit jarring on that first Illinara album was the kind of, I mean, it was kind of like part nightmarish lullaby, but it was also a little bit like hamming around on a Casio keyboard, like Plinky Plonky segments, you know what I mean? Like they sounded like super, like that's where the whole like kind of bedroom aesthetic, the whole production of the album kind of came to the fore a little bit, I think. But he's kind of nurtured what those songs and that aesthetic of that album was trying to do into something really gorgeous, where you do get like more kind of streamlined electronic-y pop elements of it on here. You get kind of subtle little R&B inflections that work really well and add to the music rather than distract from it. I mean, there's so much going on here for an album that still, like you said, Steve, sounds so much like it belongs perfectly under the banner of Zeelandia. I mean, the track Golden Liar is absolutely stunning. It sounds like it could have been written for like the final standoff in a cinematic adaptation of Red Dead Redemption or something. Like, I don't know if anyone's heard that soundtrack for that last game, but it's so, so good. But it's so like taut and tense and atmospheric, and it's right on the edge until it bursts into that big cinematic climax. And Manuel's voice is just so rich and soulful, and he suits that bluesy Western style so, so well. And then the next track up is a song called Erase, which has this almost kind of meshuggery, chugging, abrasive, extreme metal stomper, but it still manages to slide into this lovely acoustic denouement at the end. And it's all carried along by him, and it all feels part of the same energy. It doesn't feel out of place. I think all these little different ideas that he's had along the way in the last few records have all come to the fore in a really beautiful, streamlined way on this album. But if you still want some of that push and pull, kind of metal versus chain gang, stomp and clap vibe as well, it does have tracks like that, you know, Bows like that, Feed the Machines like that, Church Burns like that. So it still has a lot of those heavier elements, but it branches out to other things in a really successful way. I mean, I think if we didn't already know how good Zeelandia was to start with and totally have confidence that he could carry through a vision like this, and if we also hadn't just had this Venom Prison album out, which was so like, what the fuck's going on here? I think we would be like fully drooling over this right now, just completely losing our minds over it. But in of its own right, it's still such a great record. And I just think he's, you know, he's carried his vision maybe further than a lot of us thought he could have when we heard that first album, as great as it was from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I did go, well, where's, you know, how, what are the legs like on this? You know, how far can it go? And I actually think by kind of like, it's weird because there is more stuff going on this record in general. But like you say, you feel like, oh, he's doing those things that have been done before a little bit, and it's still those elements exist. And maybe it's, I think because it is so, so it's so seductively instantaneous all the way through, it just hits you, it keeps hitting you. It feels like some kind of greatest hits collection, this. I think every single song pretty much feels like a banger. It's got the most the catchiest, most melodic stuff they've done on it. It's got the most clearly instantaneous riffs, but then it's still got, I mean, you know, I don't want people to think that this doesn't have blast beats or black metal screaming on or anything on it, but I mean, he's just, the vision is so unique, and I think this points Zeelandia in a direction where you think, well, if this is their, I don't know, say this is their, like their Chaos AD, if they can then go and make their Roots or even their, I mean, you know, this reminds me more on the metal that it's got with of stuff like Sepultura or Pantera. And if they go and make their Great Southern Trendkill or Far Beyond Driven or whatever after this, then that would be really, really, really exciting. But I don't think he will stop at that point. I think they're, you know, I know there's a lot of sort of people from the underground who are like, this is really good, but we're going to lose him. We're going to lose him in the same way as we lost, or whether they think they ever even had Death Heaven might be a little bit debatable. But I know people think that he will probably go off and, you know, be a kind of pitchfork.
I was just going to say, yeah, like South by Southwest kind of like trendy artist. I could definitely see that, you know, I could see, I mean, you know, places like BBC Six Music play a lot of metal actually, but I could see him getting played on there and championed on there. This is almost one of those albums where if someone, if I was going to try and kind of subtly get someone into extreme metal without telling them that I was doing it, like I would push them towards something like this because it just has such a unique flavor that I don't think you'd even, if you went into this kind of thing, I don't think you would have that kind of standoffish thing people have towards like death and black metal where it's just like, oh, it's all a noise. It's just abrasive. I can't deal with it. I think he works those elements in such a seductive way that they really affect you. They hit you and they mean something when they come in. I think the sky's the limit really in terms of the kind of people that would find something to enjoy in this record.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a brilliant thing. Because ultimately, you know, when those bits do come in on this record, they are so fucking heavy. They arguably sound heavier on this record due to the fact that they're used so much less, because they're used so sparingly. When you do hear, you know, the full-blown power of what they can do, I think it sounds absolutely like face-meltingly heavy, but it's just you've got to wait quite a long time between those things. But the thing is, everything about it is so good. Like, I mean, if you just want to listen to a black metal record, this is not your record, right? Mm-hmm. No, you don't even need to wonder or worry about this at all. This probably isn't really for you. If all you're interested in is kind of heavy stuff, then you're probably not going to love this, because it's certainly their most palatable record.
Mm.
But yet, weirdly, I kind of feel like it's this heaviest one as well.
Yeah, it's it's catchier, but heavier. I know what you mean. I think what a lot of it comes from is just the production as well. Like that kind of bedroom, kind of charming, but, you know, rough around the edges bedroom production on the first record is kind of gone now. And this sounds massive. You know, there's a riff on, I think it's I Caught You, that is just like fucking hell. Like, and it comes out of nowhere. And because you've not had much of that kind of full on like metal attack vibe to the record by that point, it just completely rips your face off in a way that maybe it wouldn't have done if it was planted somewhere on that first record and didn't sound so colossal because the production didn't quite do it justice and everything else. I'm just blown away by how, you know, for the second time in a week after the Venom Prison record, how there's so much going on in one sense, like you said, but it all feels so well defined and nothing feels out of place. I mean, he's a real artist, this guy. And I just think, I said the same thing about Venom Prison as well. I don't know what to expect on the next album. Like, I know there'll be core elements that I would expect to be in there, you know, his amazing voice and that kind of bluesy backbone to it, a bit of extreme metal here and there, but he just continues to kind of open up his palette further and further. I just think that's so exciting. And, you know, I hope that people go with it. I hope that people, you know, on that Meshuggah tour. I mean, I think, is he doing the Royal Albert Hall date? I can't remember. Because sound good.
Yeah.
If he's on that, my God, that will sound good in a venue like that. Do you know what I mean? God. Jesus.
Be absolutely incredible, yeah. Mm. I can't for the life of me understand who this kind of isn't for.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think, like, arguably, this is, although that first album was, let's say, the more, I guess, the sort of the more gnarly sounding one, all that kind of, the more charming one, I kind of weirdly think as well, the more that Zelenarda go on and the more albums that he does, the more and more authentic he sounds, whether the production's better, whether more money's being chucked at it, what, you know, whatever road he goes down, I feel like he's just getting better at doing all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Everything sounds just, the songwriting is better, the idea is kind of congealed and balanced in exactly the right way. There's nods to other things, like, you know, the instantaneous nature of alternative metal or groove metal or whatever, to me, does actually lend itself. It might not be as original an idea as melding it with like grindcore or whatever, or it's black metal or death metal or whatever, But those two things do complement each other better, really. Mm-hmm. That's why new metal works, right? Because, you know, hip-hop and groovy guitar riffs, Rage Against the Machine, work because those guitar riffs are really, really bouncy and propulsive, and so is the vocal delivery of Zach De La Rocha. That's why that, you know, that's why they're so massive, because it just feels good. It just works. And I think
sometimes a bit of sparseness is a good thing in, in writing riffs.
Yeah. And I think there wasn't really a lot of room to maneuver on that first record. And now there is, like, there's loads of, like, so much to kind of take in, and to, it just feels, it just sounds big. It just sounds like it should be played at festivals, that, you know, like you say, this at the Royal Albert Hall, like, I don't think it's going to sound weak or tinny. It's going to sound absolutely massive. It's going to sound crushing.
And you think even kind of Meshuggah fans who are kind of so dedicated, and when you go see Meshuggah live, you want to see one fucking thing and one thing only. You're on the mood for one very distinct and specific style of music. But I could, like, I just can't see him coming on in front of any crowd and leaving anyone who isn't familiar with his music at that point leaving going, what the hell did I just see? You know, like, it, that's just so exciting. And, you know, we're not even halfway through February, and we've already had two very young... I mean, it's probably unfair to call Zilinada a metal act in a lot of sense, because he's got so much going on in his music now. But we've had two young acts from the metal scene come forward and just completely expand and blow up their own rule book and just put out some of the boldest, most interesting music that we've heard in quite some time. So it really speaks to how... kind of brave and experimental a lot of young bands are being now. And that's really exciting, because if there's one thing that, in that endless conversation about who's going to make it big and blah, 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 like, the metal bands that make it big and have a long career and are successful are the ones that do not compromise and, like, are unafraid to just completely be themselves, their own thing. And I just think both those artists are doing that, and it's producing really exciting music, which is bloody great.
Yeah, I agree. Bloody, I think this album is fucking brilliant. I think come the end of the year, there's no way on earth people have forgotten about this record, and I think it's going to be featuring very, very highly in our albums of the year list. I would put that prediction down. You could take that to the fucking bank, Merlin.
I would be very surprised if I don't feel the same way. One band who have kind of certainly helped define an entire subgenre of metal is Cult of Luna, and they have their new album, The Long Road North, also out tomorrow on Metal Blade Records. You know, we kind of know what to expect from Cult of Luna to an extent, because they've helped define an entire style of music and they are the very best at what they do. But there's still some quite interesting little tidbits and notes on this album, especially with the personnel involved. I was most interested to find that Colin Stetson, who is a composer that's collaborated with the likes of Arcade Fire and Bon Iver and Tom Waits, but coolest of all, wrote the score for Hereditary, which is one of the single best and most terrifying horror films of the last 10 years. If you haven't seen Hereditary, fuck's sake, go see Hereditary.
I haven't seen Hereditary.
Oh, it's so good.
I haven't, no.
Oh, mate, Hereditary's amazing.
Cooler than Arcade Fire, is it?
Oh, yeah, big time.
I have my doubts.
Maybe not as scary. but yeah, Hereditary is definitely, it's fucking awesome. Trust me, you will like it, Steve.
Okay.
And Colin worked with the band on the final track of this album, Beyond Two, which we'll get to in a bit. And we actually have a little something involving Johannes from Cult of Luna and Colin Stetson coming up in a future issue of Metal Hammer, which is quite exciting. Steve, you are certainly best placed to talk about Cult of Luna out of the two of us. What do you make of this record?
Yeah, I think Cult of Luna have had an absolutely phenomenal decade of music that they've put out. I mean, they put out an EP last year, which was about 40 minutes long. It's as long as some people's albums. Featured Mark Lanegan, formerly of the Screaming Trees, and now a very excellent solo artist in his own right, on it, which was excellent. And that was probably the thing that I was like, yeah, it's all right, about the most from what they've done recently. 2019, their last full-length album, The Dawn to Fear, I thought was absolutely fucking wonderful. So great. And I really like the it's funny you just mentioned Arcade Fire, because I think there's little bits of kind of Radioheadisms and Arcade Fire isms in A Dawn to Fear, which I personally, as a big fan of both of those bands, really enjoyed hearing. You could say it's kind of a bit almost sort of Scandi folk influence as well, I think, on that album. And I like all of that stuff. And I think hearing kind of Cult of Luna do that mad, massive, crushing post-metal riffola with those elements was really super exciting. The album they did with Julie Christmas, Mariner, is amazing. Back in, what are we saying, 2015, 2016, I want to say. And then Vertical, which they did in 2012, again, is absolutely incredible. So it's been a really, really good decade. And Cult of Luna are brilliant. And so the bar for this, I think, is really, really, really high.
Okay.
And that's why, for me personally, and this is no slight on this record at all, but I do think it's probably my least favourite full-length album that they've put out in the last decade. And that is really because we're talking about kind of, from those three albums, I think you're talking about high nines pushing tens for some of those records. And a nine across the board for, like, minimum nine for those last three full-length records that they put out, I'd say. So this is... starts off, and I was like, oh, it's Cult of Luna, which is great. You know, Cult of Luna sounds like Cult of Luna, very much like Zelenarda, we were just saying, and like we said about Venom Prison last week, and Korn. You know, they have their core sound, they have the thing that they do. And on this record, you know, the first couple of tracks are pretty standard Cult of Luna songs, i.e. really, really massive kind of glacial moving
big walls of sound
that, you know, kind of build and like tumble, kind of build up, those rocks are built and then they kind of tumble down around you, and no one quite does it, well, apart from maybe Neurosis, no one quite does it like Cult of Luna, and it's brilliant. And I was like, yeah, great, Cult of Luna sounding like Cult of Luna. And, you know, that's fine. I think if it had been a whole album of that, I might have been a little bit actually disappointed. As it is, I think it's kind of... I think that's my kind of least favourite part of the album, is the first few songs. Because I did just sort of go, I've kind of heard this. Like, I've kind of heard you guys do this thing before. And it's mightily impressive, but I have kind of heard you do this thing before. And I suppose, like, what is this, their eighth full-length album, just as Cult of Luna, like, not including all the other the EPs and the collaborations and stuff that they've done. So eight albums into, you know, like 20 years into, plus years into a career, you probably can't really expect them to do anything too different. But I think this album does have its own flavour. It still does. I think as you get towards the end, and when you mentioned Mr. Stetson, I've forgotten his first name.
Colin Stetson.
Yeah, I think when you get
Mr. Stetson
to his friends, I think you should. Yeah, Colin Stetson deserves a mention, as does Mariem Wallentin, who provides some really, really beautiful, high lilting ambient vocal passages on the song Beyond Eye, which gives it a bit of a different flavour. There are touches of stuff on this, which is different to a lot of things that Cult of Luna have done before. I think they have experimented with kind of electronics and bits and bobs before. But on this record, there are parts of it, particularly on the sort of second half of the record, where bands like Between the Buried and Me, Tool, and even Opeth before they went full prog, kind of cropped up for me a bit, which I think is odd, because although they're sort of broadly trying to do the same thing, I think progressive metal and post-metal are quite different things. And I've not really heard Cult of Luna do what I consider kind of prog metal parts before, but they do that here. And my own personal taste would be that I probably like the more post-metal stuff more than I like the prog metal stuff. But it's good to hear them doing that. And I think there's a few songs towards the end where I was like, this is fucking great. This sounds really original. They're doing something quite different from what they've done before. All those icy, synthy, kind of weird synth stuff. It's incredibly well collaged with different sounds. Like, there's bits of like brass and horn sections on it. There's weird synth parts on it. It's got like Tool-esque sort of riffing, as opposed to those, you know, big rumbling, slow building, crushing riffs that they've done before. And I was like, yeah, this is good. This is different. Cult of Luna are excellent. They are like fucking excellent. And they've been one of the best bands for the last decade. This is more, this is, falls to me, slightly below the standards of their very, very best work. Okay. But it's still brilliant.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, it seems to be an album that, I mean, to say that's the, I'm not even going to say worse, to say that's the least frothing take I've heard on the Cult of Luna record shows you what a high standard they've had, that you basically said, it's still brilliant, it's just not my favourite Cult of Luna album. I think that's fair enough. Yeah, I mean, like, Cult of Luna, I was saying before we started recording, they're one of those bands that I listen to them every so often, usually when they've got a new album out, and I think, this is fucking amazing. Like, they just sound so colossally huge, and the kind of world building they do within their songs is just like not like a lot of other bands out there. I mean, Neurosis, like, you're right, Steve, would be an obvious other comparison. And then I kind of just forget about them until they put an album out again. So I am not the best placed, I guess, to talk about this record, but I really, really liked it. I thought the track that Colin did sounded good. It's kind of a bit odd that it was like almost like one of the very shortest tracks right at the end. It's kind of like almost like a kind of closing credits song. Maybe that's like not a coincidence, but I thought that was quite nice, very eerie and weird and Hereditary-esque in its own way. But yeah, it is. I think it's safe to say if you're a Cult of Luna fan, you're not going to be massively disappointed by the very, very good new Cult of Luna record. Alex Della gave it a glowing 8 out of 10 in the new issue of Hammer, which is out right now. And as I said, if you're interested in Colin Stetson being involved in this album, you're definitely going to want to pick up an upcoming issue of Metal Hammer that will be out soon. Just to prove just how...
Say as well, I would definitely give that album... Like, for me, 8 out of 10 is probably about right, I'd say. There's a song on it, if you're interested, and you just want to listen to, like, one thing. I mean, it's hard to listen to any one thing they do in isolation. I do think you need to listen to the full album, but there's a song on it which is, like, 11 minutes, 39 seconds long called Blood Upon Stone, and that, for me, is, like, the most interesting, probably the best song on the record. That's where I think they... It's the more unusual thing of Cult of Luna have done. It's good. I feel like I've not really given it the kind of praise that it deserves because it's only because they have been faultless in the last decade. And this, you know, I wouldn't say there's any faults with this record. I think it's just that the bar is so high and they've been so consistent that, you know, that's all I'm saying, basically.
I think that's very fair enough. I mean, just to prove how varied and diverse and, you know, all over the place in a good way the metal scene is at the moment with how many big releases are coming out. Amorphis have an album out tomorrow as well. Now, you've not heard this, have you, Steve? Am I right in saying that?
I haven't heard it. Whoever was doing the press for them didn't send it to me. And I listened to a couple of songs that are currently available. And I would suggest that whoever you are who does the press for Amorphis... who didn't send it to me, I would suggest you're probably doing your job quite well because you've saved...
Not for you.
Because I've listened to two songs. I'm not going to judge the album based on those two songs, but I would suggest that were I to have been sent it, I might have come on here and maybe given it not such a hot take. So, crack on.
That's fair enough. Well, I mean, I do like Amorphis and I've been listening to this album, so I'm going to talk it up. When I was at uni in the mid-2000s, I got into a lot of power and folk metal. I think this surprises people when I tell them this because I'm always banging on about the stuff I usually bang on about, and I'm such a nu metal nostalgist and this, that and the other, but I really got into a lot of power and folk metal when I was at uni, and that was a time when I got into Sabaton for the first time at Prima Victoria. Obviously Dragon Force really blew up around then and I was banging to them. I got into bands like Edguy. I really liked that first Aelstorm album, don't like them anymore. I got into Fintroll, Teresas, loads of that kind of stuff. I was banging all that kind of stuff that was starting to blow up in the metal scene at the time. And one of the bands that were really starting to make bigger waves internationally at that point in the metal scene were Amorphis. They just got a new singer in Tommy Yeltsin, who just has one of the richest and most instantly recognisable voices in that entire part of the metal scene, I think. And they knocked out two really great records in a row, 2 years running around that time with Eclipse and Silent Waters. And I've liked pretty much everything they've done since. They've evolved into this really well-honed, epic, quite proggy brand of folk metal. And their last album, which was, I think, 3.5 years ago now, Queen of Time, had quite a lot of experimentation on. There was like sax solos, there were big jazzy interludes, there was a lot going on. And this record, Halo, which is their first for Atomic Fire Records, it still has a lot going on, but I feel like they focused in a bit better and just got to the core of what makes Amorphis work so well. It has absolutely everything that I like about this band, everything that I think that has kind of elevated above them above their peers for a long time now. Like I said, Tomi has the best voice in that particular corner of the metal scene. I think he sounds as great as everyone here. His growls are really imperious and commandeering. His cleans are really rich and emotional. And musically, it's funny really, because I'm not a prog metal fan, generally speaking. I'm really not. I don't really like Dream Theater. The more proggy Opeth have got, the less I've really been into them. It's just not a side of the scene that I really consider myself into. But there's some bands that introduce little elements of that that I still enjoy. Like, I love it when Maiden go long and proggy. And I like it when Amorphis do that as well. And I guess it's because most of the songs on here are kind of in or around the 5 minute mark, so they don't kind of hang around too long. But there is a lot of that slightly proggy, almost Dream Theater-y thing going on here. There's big, epic, galloping, heavy metal crescendos as well. There's splashes of Melodeath in here, which Amorphis have always been really good at. There's little bursts of Middle Eastern acoustic flourishes as well. And I think they're just a band that, kind of what you said about Cult of Luna, but in the sense that they know what they're really good at, and they are very recognisable within their fields, and they do it better than pretty much anyone else around them that does this kind of thing specifically. So I think this new album, Halo, is really, really good. I think it's come at a point where there's a lot of genuinely kind of challenging and exciting and bold albums coming out. But if you're into kind of folk metal or power metal or anything in that kind of side of the scene, I think you could do a lot worse than pick this album up, because I'm enjoying it quite a lot, which is good.
You think you know somebody.
Yeah, I know.
You're into Egg Guy.
I used to love a bit of Egg Guy. What was it, Rocket Rides? I think that was a human cake of Rocket Rides. That album, loved it. I went to watch the most power metal bill ever, where it was Dragon Force, Sabaton and Egg Guy at the Astoria. And it was just before Dragon Force went like supernova, because I think they were headlining Brixton not long after that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, I can go in for a little bit of that. Abso-fucking-lutely.
I think the most power metal bill I saw, I went to... No, actually, that's not... No, I was going to say... You said Fintroll. It's not Fintroll.
I loved a bit of Fintroll.
Corplicani.
Yeah, I was into them as well.
And Tear. I had to review for the mag once.
I remember that.
So like, that was, yeah, work experience day for me, wasn't it?
Let it never be said Steve isn't capable of taking an objective stance on bands after doing that review.
No, I did Epica as well, actually. Jonathan sent me to do Epica, and he did actually go, sorry about this.
Yeah, Steve's not really into that stuff, and we didn't have a lot of symphonic metalheads on the...
Not really into
on
that
the, on the on the team at that point. But yeah, I like a bit of power metal. I'll tell you what I like a lot of. And not that, anyway, Amorphis are folk metal, but my point was I was into that kind of, I guess what people see is the slightly less cool side of the metal scene. But I embraced it. One thing I've always embraced extra fucking hard is obviously new metal. So we are going to quickly talk about an album that's actually out next week, but I wanted to do it today because I don't think we're going to do reviews next week. It is the debut full-length album from New Delhi metalers Bloody Woods. It's called Rakshak. And it is out tomorrow. It's self-released. And we've actually covered these guys quite a bit across Metal Hammer over the last couple of years. They had a song called Ari Ari, which had a really fun video that went viral. And this is their first full-length album, Rakshak, which means protector or guardian in Hindi. And I love this album. I think if you basically love the idea of Punjabi new metal, this is the record for you. It's big, it's brash, it's swaggering, it's occasionally straight up silly. It's stacked with those massive new metal riffs that will make you bang your head. It's got these big old grooves that will make you want to dance around. And it's all infused with this really cool blend of traditional folkloric Indian instrumentation, which gives it a really unique flavour. And for me, this is the most fun album of 2022 so far. I will be astounded if another metal band puts out an album as fun as this by the end of the year. Yeah, it's just great. I know you've heard a bit of this. You've not heard the whole thing, but what have you made of what you've heard of Bloody Wood generally so far, Steve?
I think I like it. I don't really know. I do. Well, the thing is that it's very, very... It's okay, so on the one hand, it's very dated. Even the bits like that are supposed to sort of be a bit more modern sound really quite dated. But on the other hand, it's so bloody infectious,
yep,
that you can't help but get swept up in it. It sort of reminds me of Censor. I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Censor?
Yeah, of course.
So it's sort of got the same. Like, I listen to Censor and I'm like, God, this sounds really fucking old now. But God, it's really fast and it's really like over the top. And it is just like you say, a kind of a sort of Indian version of that. Like, they had that kind of a bit. Funny, you messaged me today and you were listening to like 90s dance music.
Don't tell him that. Like, yeah,
he can listen to whatever he wants to listen to when he's doing a workout. But if you
that was true, it was a workout mix.
Yeah. So, and I always
you've exposed me, Steve. Everyone's gonna not think I'm the extreme metal aficionado who listens to nothing but riffs now. Like, they obviously do. Who listens to this podcast? Definitely.
But yeah, like the electronic stuff that I heard from that, it kind of sounds like it could come from like Baby D or Hadaway or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that shit, the thing is that shit has aged terribly, but at the same time, it still sounds fucking brilliant. It sounds
The funny thing is, you say that, but I guess the originals have aged not great in that sense. But you'd be amazed how much of mainstream commercial dance music is still rehashing all that shit for like the seventh or eighth time now. Every time I'm in the gym, funnily enough, talking about working out, I'm hearing like songs where I'm like, is this just using the riff of What Is Love again? Like, this is like the 18th song I've heard do this. What's going on? So yeah, maybe Bloody Wood on something. Who knows?
Yeah. By the way, that's quite, you know, whenever Merlin's in the gym, that's quite a lot, by the way. Should just say that.
Thanks, shouldn't mate.
They, really? We should Thanks, just mate. Point out how often you work out.
Thanks. And yet my arms are still half the size of his.
No, you sent me a picture of your arms over there.
You are exposing me. You're making me look like a right basic idiot right now. Stop it.
That's all right.
No one wants to hear this.
Oh, okay. Look, well, I've not heard Bloody Wood enough. I tell you what, I like it. Here's what I say. I like it. I like the cut of their jib, is what I would say. I like the I like the fact that they are embracing just chucking all manner of, I need to have shit at a wall then, but they're not, because they're not doing that, but they are just chucking all the stuff that just makes you want to move your bum.
Yeah, definitely. It's just so, it's weird because like this album's so fun and bouncy and kind of daft in what it is, but like, it's not a piss take record. It's all done in total earnest. And, you know, lyrically they're talking about politics, mental health. They talk about sexual abuse, poverty, spirituality. Like, there's a lot going on here, but it's all done in this kind of big, bouncy, daft thing. So you kind of have to just decide within the first 30 seconds of listening to this band whether you're going to go all in on it or not. Because if you're not just going to embrace it and go all in on it, then forget it, because you're just not going to enjoy it as much. I mean, if there's one occasionally glaring issue I have with it, is that Raoul Kerr, who's their rapper, like, you have to definitely take a big pinch of Fred Durst with his lyrics, because they do border on straight up, like, let's just say they're very on the nose at times. You know, I think maybe I'd like to hear a little bit more kind of, I don't know, thought behind the lyrics, or I don't know what it is, but it's just like, they're so silly at times that like, they will literally make you burst out laughing. But you know, Limp Bizkit are one of my favorite bands, so I've got no issue with that in of itself, but sorry, go on.
Presumably that's not his first language as well.
Well, yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, you kind of give a little on that one. I don't want to be like a dick about it, but, and anyway, at the end of the day, you know, in glam metal, bands sing about partying and shagging. In death metal, people sing about violence. And in new metal, evidenced by this record, people rap about being as hard as the UFC. So, like, that's fine. I am okay with that. But yeah, it's, and also, you need big rap and sing-along hooks with music like this. And to be fair to Raoul, like, he absolutely provides that. So I could be cynical about it, or, you know, a bit judgmental, but I guarantee when I finally get to see this band live, which I am gagging to, I will be enthusiastically rapping along with every single word. I think every time I hear this album, I just think this is going to be so good live. I can't envision a world where this doesn't go down amazingly on a stage, you know?
I was all for him until I realised it was going to make you rap. Not sure the world needs that, to be honest, but, you know, fine.
It's okay. So I'm all right to flash the guns and listen to dance music, yeah. But you draw the line at rapping. Fine.
Yeah, right. I think. Well, look, mate, you can have two of three.
Killing my career dead. But yeah, I think this album's great. It's out tomorrow. Once you've kind of got through the, I guess, the imperious journey of that Cult of Lugan album, you just think, oh, I just want a little palate cleanser. Bash on Bloodywood, because they are so, so good. Yeah, they are just great fun. So there you go. Great music continues to just swamp us at the moment. Bloodywood, that's out next week. That's not out tomorrow, so you've got a week to wait for that, actually. New Amorphis record is really good if you're into that kind of thing. The Cotalina album's great, but the album of the week, for sure, is that Zielinada record, self-titled, out tomorrow on MKVA. Just... another star is born. Not born, another star has kind of grown into something quite spectacular in the metal scene. Mm-hmm. And who knows where he could go from here. That is it for this week's review roundup, I believe. So I think, Steve, you're looking at me, you're all right? Did you want to drop anything else in this week or nah?
No.
That's all right. Sometimes you surprise me. You take me unaware.
Well, I would say the Woven Hand album came out last week. And that's really good.
Good.
If you like sort of goth music.
And I reckon lots of people that listen to this podcast probably do. So there you go. I think that's five albums we've dropped for you that you should go and listen to imminently. That is all for this week's show then. In that case, we'll be back next week for episode 201. Don't forget to go to bit.ly/buyhammer to pick up our latest issue. If you want to get hold of those exclusive Korn bundles, including the lovely foil effect art print, go to bit.ly/Korn bundle. We'll see you on next week's show. Take care, everybody, and stay safe. Goodbye, everyone.
See you later.